Welcome to 24/7 World Radio Podcast with Brother Eric John Phelps, coming to you today on this March the 9th, 2025, with my Sunday sermon. The title of this sermon will be How Satan Conquered America Using His Jesuit Order on March 9th, 1933. Politically conquering America on March 9th, 1933. But for me to bring you to that date, I have to go back. Remember, as I've always taught you, when studying history or a certain event in history, you must go back upstream and begin to go down the river in your canoe so that when you arrive at the place of landing and you can dock your canoe on a certain topic that you wish to deal with, you know how you got there. This is the importance of history. If you destroy a nation's history, you destroy that nation. Without the ability to fall back on historical events that are properly recorded by patriotic and nationalistic Bible-reading historians, you have nothing. And so, to get to March 9th, 1933 for you, I have to go back a little bit in history, let's say about 500 years, to see then where we are and how we got to March 9th, 1933, which is the great historical benchmark of America. Not 1868 with the 14th Amendment. That's important, but it's not the benchmark. Not 1871 with the Act, the District of Columbia Act. It's important, but it's not a benchmark. The calling for the registration of births in 1901, 1902, to then spread to be ultimately completed in the eyes of the military government that had been established in 1933, that by 1933 all registration of births was deemed correct, finished. So, the great benchmark of American history is March 9th, 1933, and you will never be taught this in any major university because they're all communists. All your major universities teaching your first 2 years and your Associates of Arts degree are all commie. They're anti-Christ, anti-Bible, and this all happened after March 9th, 1933. It's just like the medical Inquisition. It's out to kill you. This all happened after March 9th, 1933. The removal of the Bibles from the public schools in 1963 happens 30 years after 1933. That would have never happened had not March 9th, 1933 taken place. You have the Pope's socialist communist black civil rights movement beginning in the 1930s with the Jesuit John Lafarge, about the time military governments imposed. And then certain notorious communists like Rosa Parks and A. Philip Randolph and Martin Luther King, they would all be the agents for the Jesuit order in further communizing American people via forced race mixing, forced miscegenation as a communist tactic for the destruction of white people. And so all of this is a result of the Jesuits taking over America on March 9th, 1933, with the ousting of civilian government as given to us by our great white Anglo-Saxon Protestant founding fathers in 1789, which was a federal government, and then enlarged and broadened into a national government by the socialist, communist, radical red Republicans with their 14th Amendment. Still we had civilian government, but it was nationalized. It ceased to be federal for whites, and it was now national for whites and blacks and Asians and whatever. This was done by the radical, red, socialist, communist, Republican Party, and its newspaper was run by Horace Greeley of the New York Tribune. Alexander Stevens called him the throne, greater than the one behind the throne, greater than the throne itself of Abraham Lincoln, calling him a king. And the radical Red Republicans, of course, destroyed the South, destroyed major cities in the South, killed off one out of four white men of the South. I mean, it was an annihilation of white Protestant Calvinist Southern culture, no matter how many black Baptists they had to kill. Why? Because of the Jesuit order. The Jesuits ran the radical Red Republicans through the person of Bernardine F. Wiget. And you have the traitorous lead chaplain, foremost chaplain of the Confederacy, who aided and abetted this loss. And he was Darius Huber. You can get a book on him. The first chaplain of the Confederacy. So they had a key Jesuit in the North, key Jesuit in the South, facilitating the destruction of over 700,000 men, most of them all white for that matter, for the destruction of the greatest white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Baptist Calvinistic Republic in history in the last 500 years. Remember, America was the greatest nation in the world during the 1800s. And some of the things that we need to review just a little bit are some of the great men that made this nation great. The first man that made this nation possible was Martin Luther, the great reformer, without which there is no Protestant Reformation or Western civilization with freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, and freedom of the press. Without Luther, we don't have that. And by the way, don't let anybody tell you that Martin Luther wrote on the Jews and their lies. He never wrote it. I teach a class on it. I have a book on it. You can find it on my website, where I prove to you through his own doctrine and his style of writing, he could have never written on the Jews and their lies. That's a Jesuit forgery. Par excellence, blaming Luther for on the Jews and their lies. Just like the Jesuits would blame the Jews for the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. They're the great liars, cheaters, ones who are going to write a book and then attribute it to someone else. That was the Donation of Constantine. That was a forgery, although the Jesuits were created then. But the papacy is a master of forgeries. And so the great forgery that they sought to tag on Luther was on the Jews and their lies. You need to get it from me. Especially you Germans. You Germans need to realize that you were set up for your destruction by the Jesuits through their publication and circulation of On the Jews and Their Lies about the time of the late 1800s, early 1900s. And for 200-300 years, that book didn't even exist. So, thank God for Martin Luther and his championing of salvation by grace through faith and that not of ourselves. It's a gift of God, not of works, as any man should boast. Because he is the one that got that scripture of the Apostle Paul in Ephesians 2:8-9 to us in the German Luther Bible. And then because Luther was a friend of Tyndale, we're also going to have it in Tyndale's Bible. And Tyndale is the father of the English Bible. Without Tyndale, there is no Geneva Bible. Without William Tyndale, there is no AV 1611 Reformation Bible in its present edition of 1769. William Tyndale was a Calvinist. You can read about him in Toppolady's works. The works of Augustus Toppolady shows you that Tyndale was a Calvinist. Without true biblical Bible-based Calvinism, which is true New Testament Christianity, I'm not talking about the apostate Calvinism of today. Without that taking up the sword of just defense against papal tyranny, there is no Western civilization. The fighting Calvinists were the ones who secured liberty to Northern Europe, and without them, there would have never been a continuation of Luther's great Reformation that he would preach, that the just shall live by faith. Romans 1:17. So Luther is our great white father, founding father. And I'm not ashamed to be white. And I trust if you are white, you're not ashamed that you're white. And I trust that if you're black or Asian or Hispanic, you don't hate us because we're white. Because you'd then be racist and bigots. And I trust that any of you Christian people that are not white are not racists and bigots and can thank God for the white race, because we got to you the Bible in your hands, in your own language, for which you should be forever grateful to us, to the extent of not robbing, raping, and murdering us and killing us, which goes on every day in America by the majority savage blacks, as opposed to the minority civil blacks who read the Bible, who pray, and who don't hate white people, and I know a few of them. So, we have the great Martin Luther, we have the great John Calvin, and Calvin would become the head of Geneva, and he would rule Geneva according to biblical standards. You can read all about it in Wiley's work, The History of Protestantism. Calvin will be responsible ultimately for the Geneva Bible, which is a forerunner of the King James Bible. And the translators used the Geneva Bible to guide them in many of their translations of the New Testament. So without Luther, without Calvin, we don't have a Bible in our own language. And it was Puritan Calvinists and John Reynolds who petitioned King James to have a new Bible for the kingdom. He was Calvinist too. So, you see why the Jesuits want to make you hate Puritans? You see why I named my church Reformation Bible Puritan Baptist Church? I'm not ashamed of Puritan in the least. Without the Puritans, we don't have anything. We don't have gun ownership. You guys like owning guns? You can thank God for the Puritans who secured your right to own and bear arms. The Baptist Calvinist men descended from the Puritans in the person of James Madison, who wrote the Second Amendment. You own guns because of the Bible in the hands of the common man, because it will take guns to set back the advances of the Jesuit order with their militaries to maintain the Reformation. And don't talk to me about turning the other cheek. Turning the other cheek has nothing to do with the church, the body of Christ. He spoke that, Christ spoke that to Israel in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 in anticipation of the establishment of the Davidic kingdom. And so that's what he did. That's what Christ did. You know what I mean? It was only for the establishment of the Davidic kingdom. Nothing more. Not for today. So we have the dawn. Ultimately, the Bible's in the hands of the common man. It's going to go through the dark ages when the Pope's going to kill and destroy anybody that has the Bible in their own languages. Remember the edict of the horrible, terrible Philip, King Philip of Spain, that anybody found reading the Bible in their homes, the men would be burnt with fire and the women would be buried alive. That's what you get from the papacy when you have the Bible in your own language, reading it in your home. That's what they want to do to you. And because Vladimir Putin is a pimp for the Pope, he has outlawed home church meetings in Russia, Mother Russia, and people can go to the Pope's Orthodox church that the Jesuits control, that don't preach the gospel. It's really identical with a papacy, like Tweedly Dee and Tweedly Dum. Putin works for the Pope, just like Trump works for the Pope, just like Biden worked for the Pope. All these leaders of these nations are papal slaves, just like that Chinese dictator in communist China. What's his name, Xi? He's busy working for the Pope. And so, what we have here in the Bible in the hands of the... Why do you think the Jesuits, when they ran communist Russia, as they do today, when they ran it during the Cold War, why do you think they took the Bibles out of the hands of the common Russian people? When I was stationed in Germany, I knew a preacher. He was a missionary or evangelist, better term. And he would smuggle Bibles into Russia. And he had the most unbelievable stories that he was bringing Bibles in his van into Russia, and the guards would check it out. And they go in, they look inside, and it's as though they didn't see the Bibles. And they say, you can go on. The Jesuits do not want the Bibles circulating in the hands of any people. And if it is circulating in their hands, they want to counterfeit it. And that's what's happened in America for the last, say, 100 years. The counterfeiting of the Bible, beginning with the American Standard Version, 1901. In England, the English Revised Version of 1885, counterfeiting the Bible, that counterfeit based on an alien Greek text and an alien Hebrew text, deviating from the Hebrew text and the Greek text of the Reformation is many, many, in thousands of places. If they can't take the Bible from you, they will counterfeit it to make it something like the Bible. And when you do that, you don't have the power of God, and you don't have the leading of the Spirit of God, and you have an apostate Christianity, and it's ready to be taken and destroyed. All those lukewarm Bibles translations produced a lukewarm church that doesn't resist papal tyranny anymore. Not to mention there are Arminian free willers. I believe the gospel on my own. Yes, I did, and so God saved me. No, you didn't. You didn't believe the gospel on your own. God gave you the faith to believe the gospel after he sent his Spirit to convict you of sin, of righteousness, and judgment. No man seeketh after God. The only ones who do are those that are moved by the Spirit of God to seek him. And then as we seek him, then he gives us the faith to believe. And we believe the gospel, Ephesians 1:13, unto salvation, our eternal salvation. See, these are the doctrines that are New Testament doctrines that were championed during the Reformation. By grace alone, through faith alone, sola fide, sola grace, only grace, only faith, only the Scripture, sola scriptura, only, to the exclusion of everything else. This is what built Western civilization, and the Lord chose white men to do it. To get the Bible in the white language of English, translating it from the white language of Greek, translating that white language of Greek into a white language of English. And the English and the Germans would take the Bible, and the Americans would take the Bible to the ends of the earth. With our Bible translated by white men to the blacks, to the Asians, Hispanic, that's right. You don't like that? Get mad at God about it. Flip the bird to God. You hate the white men so bad. How dare you use these wicked white men to get the gospel to us? That's what he did. We have the highest civilizations in world history. If you don't like it, move. It's time we white men started going to war intellectually and on debate and shouting down these blasphemers and these liars, destroying Western civilization with their propaganda. Be they white or black or Jewish or Hispanic, I care not what they are. You want to demean this country, demean Western civilization, you're going to have a fight verbally with me and others. Not putting up with it. That's what every preacher ought to be doing. Fighting is good for us. Fighting raises our testosterone. This is what we ought to do every day. Contending for the faith once delivered to the saints, as well as contending for our real history, so we don't let the spiritual bastards rob us of our real history and make us feel like we white people are the most wicked people in the world. We built the greatest civilizations. We built England. We built Scotland. We built Germany. We built the Netherlands. We built Denmark. We built Sweden. We built Canada. Not Quebec, but we built the rest of Canada that had any in Toronto, the great city of Toronto. We built America. We built Texas. That's right. Remember, what is it? The Alamo and Goliad, right, sister? White men who read the Bible fought Roman Catholic savage Mexicans and Roman Catholic savage Italians and Roman Catholic savage French and Roman Catholic savage Spanish to beat them to ultimately establish Western civilization. And the date for the establishment of Western civilization is 1648. That's the end of the Pope's Dark Ages that started with around 606 with that Pope that assumed universal spiritual power over all men. In 606, in 756, the Pope would then be given the temporal power by Pepin the Great, quote-unquote, and then the Pope would claim the right to rule all nations through the doctrine of temporal power. It doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from Pepin, the grant to the Pope that he has a right to rule nations, particularly Rome and then other nations. All of this. And who resisted this? Who resisted the Pope's spiritual power? The men who preached the gospel, for which they were burnt and mass murdered. Who resisted the political power of the papacy? Well, you have Henry of Navarre of France. Henry was a Calvinist. He was a French Calvinist and a Huguenot. The Huguenots made France great. They were the best, the greatest silversmiths probably in all of Europe. And King Louis XIV, at the advice and direction of his Jesuit, Pierre Lachaise, expelled the Huguenots from France expelled them from France in, what was it, 1685. 1685 is called the Revocation of the Edict of Nantes. Kicked out 500,000 French Huguenots, another 500,000 perished. And that was the destruction of the finest population of France. Who did that? The Jesuits in control of the king, Louis XIV, the Sun King, of which the Beatles sang, "The Sun King." So, what we have, and it's going on here, was the founding of wonderful white Anglo-Saxon Celtic Western civilization. And the modern era begins in 1648. And a few years later, the revocation of the Edict of Nantes. And many, many Huguenots, French Huguenots, came to America, north of South Carolina, because of that. It's escaping the Jesuit hand of murder. That's how America was started, by white men escaping Jesuitism, the armies of Europe, and killing us to get us out of there, to get us over here where we could evangelize the Indians, because that's what we did. That's why William Bradford came over here, to evangelize the Indians. You read the Mayflower Compact, to evangelize the natives. That's right. And later on, that's why you see the great chief of the Apache, Geronimo. He's a saved man. He was saved, which George Bush stole his skull and put it in the crypt, in the Bonesman's crypt in Yale. These wicked sinners. Remember, the greatest men are white, and the worst men are white. White supremacy is an absolutely true doctrine. If you deny it, you're in fantasy land. You know any black man as evil as Aleister Crowley? Huh? You know any black man as great as George Washington or Andrew Jackson? They don't exist. You know any preachers, black preachers of the caliber of John Witherspoon and others? No, they don't exist. White supremacy for good, white supremacy for evil. And so, these are white nations of Western civilization that the Lord used to take the gospel to the ends of the earth and to build beautiful cultures. The great finest engineering ever. The creation of all sorts of fabulous inventions. That's why Americans were called the inventive Americans. We were the most inventive people in the world in the 1800s. All of this is a result of the Bible in the hand of the common man. You like talking on the telephone? You like that? That's a result of a white man who pioneered the telegraph. Morse. With Morse code. White man, Bible-believing man. The first message over Morse code was, "Look what God hath wrought." Samuel Morse. Get his book, Foreign Conspiracy Against the Liberties of the United States, written in 1835, tells you the Jesuits were out to destroy America way back when, in 1835. While we're prospering and we have the finest of everything here because of the work ethic that the Bible instills in a man when he's saved, and so he's working with his hands, he's building the finest farms. You got the Mennonites with the finest farms anywhere. When the Mennonites were in Prussia, they had beautiful farms. Very high standard of living, the best food. White Protestant Calvinist nations are the best food producers in the world. We produce the finest food. That is, if we don't have a government that's jamming all these drugs down our throats and telling us what we're going to feed our cattle. But that goes back to March 9th, 1933, which I'm getting to. Okay. So we have the Reformation is a result of the great white Protestant and Calvinist Baptist Western civilization, particularly of England, America, and Germany. So the Jesuits knew, because they're going to start the Counter-Reformation in 1545 with demon-possessed Don Ignatius Loyola, they knew if they're going to destroy the Reformation, bring the world back to the Dark Ages, they got to replace the Bible in the hands of the common man with a counterfeit, and they have to destroy the white race people. So what better way to destroy them than to, why, get them to take immunizations, inoculations? And that all starts in the 1800s for the detriment of the white Protestant nations. They're the ones that started doing it first. And then we're going to wage war. We're going to have white Protestant nations wage war on each other so they can kill each other. What do you think the Boer War was about when the Jesuits fomented that? Killing off the white Protestant Boers of South Africa using the white Protestant English to do it. What a disgrace. Disgrace. White Protestants killing white Protestants. I don't have a problem killing the white Roman Catholics because, you see, they're busy facilitating the designs of the Pope. The Catholic Church is a war machine. Roman Catholic institution is a war machine using its Catholic peoples for the purpose of war. To destroy the Reformation. That's why the Jesuits wanted to put them in every power of political power everywhere in all the major cities. All these Irish Catholics everywhere. Polish Catholics. Italian Catholics. Put them in power. And we'll control the mafia with Italian Catholics and Sicilian Catholics. Put them in power so we can destroy the white Protestant and Calvinist Baptist peoples of North America. That's in the 1800s. The royal Italian family that is responsible for the mafia here is the Colonnas, the giga quadrillionaires. They run the mafia. Don't tell me that the Russian mafia and the Yakuza and all the other mafias, they're all subject to the Vatican. All of them. Any mafioso that doesn't want to be is going to be toast. Why do you think they shot Sam Giancana in the back of the head? A mafioso shooter that Giancana knew. Giancana's making making steaks on his grill. Somebody walks up behind him, puts his .22 right in the back of his ear and shoots him, kills him dead. Because Giancana was going to have to testify for the Senate Committee on the assassinations of JFK, and they didn't want him there. So bye-bye, Sammy. So, the Jesuits with their Counter-Reformation, what are we going to do? Why, we're going to found a bunch of schools. We'll found universities. That's what we'll do. And we'll teach our students to take over white Protestant nations and to rule the white Catholic nations. And then we'll send them into the Far East, ultimately, to take over China and Japan and Russia. All through their schools. They have in Rome what's called the American College. That's where their priests go that they're going to be then ministering for the Pope submitting America. You have the Russian College, the American College. To get all these priests educated by Jesuits to work together in the destruction of nationalism and true patriotism to then reduce these nations to the abject power of some dictator run by the Pope. What do you think's going on in Ukraine right now? You think the leader of Ukraine, that Jew Zelensky, has any love for the Ukrainian people? If he did, he wouldn't continue their slaughter and sacrifice. And you wouldn't have Nazis and priests and Jesuits leading the way for the Ukrainian government and military. You think the Jesuits like the Orthodox Ukrainians? Do you think the Jesuits like about 10 years ago when the Ukrainian men rose up against their dictator and drove him out of their country? Do you think the Jesuits like that? Do you think that went unpunished? They're getting their punishment now for throwing off a Jesuit military dictator, Jesuit-controlled military dictator. So now we're going to kill as many beautiful white Slavic Ukrainian men as possible. And we will use white Slavic Russian men to do it so they can both kill each other, just further destroying the white-raced men that are Orthodox heretics by the papacy, so they can kill each other. That fact ought to be brought out on the news, Roman Catholic Hannity, Roman Catholic head of, MSNBC? None of these Roman Catholics will bring that up. And so the Counter-Reformation is purposed to destroy historic white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Western civilization and Baptist Calvinists. Remember, without Calvinism, there is no liberty. There is nobody taken to the battlefield and fighting on 1,000 battlefields is what they did. Cromwell was a Calvinist. He was a Puritan Calvinist. And without Cromwell, there is no George Washington. You read the book, The Hand of God in History, by this great author that was given to me by Brother Ed Canfield. Read The Hand of God in History. Hollis Reed. Get it? Read it. He says, after a 7-year investigation, as he writes his wonderful history, he tells you that without Oliver Cromwell, there's no George Washington. And he's absolutely right. Cromwell saved the Reformation in England, for which reason the Jesuits hate his guts. You never hear anything good said about him. And that's why King Charles II, when he was restored to the throne, that wicked sinner who turned his throne room into a whorehouse. He ordered that Cromwell's body be exhumed, cut off his head, dragged through the streets of London, and then cut off his head and put his head on a spire at Westminster Abbey, and there it stayed for 20 years. That's the Jesuit Counter-Reformation, folks. And we better wake up to it. Everything that's done to us evilly ultimately comes from some Jesuit power, Jesuit stooge doing that to us. Be it property tax or income tax or all that sin tax. That's real sin tax. Local guy here, Russ Diamond, hates property tax. That's right, Russ. We got to get rid of it. You got to fund Pennsylvania another way. To think of these poor people, they work all their lives, they pay their house off, and then to have it taken from them because they can't pay the Pope's wicked, sinful property tax, where we make it a privilege to own your residential property. It's all sin. And it all goes back to the papacy and the Jesuit military power through their high-level Freemasons that put it upon us. That's right, I'm getting to March 9th, 1933. So, we have our founding Bible of America. It's called the AV 1611 Reformation English Bible in its present edition of 1769 with the various corrections and clarifications that we have every right to make according to the message of the translators to the reader, which I covered previously. Doesn't make it any less indirectly inspired. It makes it clarified. In fact, I was just reading a verse this morning when it says that Jesus refused to walk in Jewry. This underlying word is for Judea. So that ought to be changed from Jewry to Judea. But why did the translators do that? Because they took the same word Judea, translated Judea in one place and translated Jewry in another for switching it up, as any good writer does. He doesn't use the same word for over and over again. That's why we read. That's why we study to show ourselves approved, rightly dividing the word of truth. And we interject clarification when we need to do it, and it's not a sin. The King James only fanatics will tell you it's a sin. We can't clarify anything. All right, well then you're an idolater, sir. And you've turned the Bible into an idol. It's the Word of God, alive and powerful, sharper than any two-edged sword. But it's no idol. And we're not to treat it as such. It's our standard for faith and practice. Sola Scriptura. So, the Jesuits hated America. The Jesuits called the American Constitution a document of Satan, and you can find that written in the works of Avril Manhattan, among others. You see, the Jesuits hate limited powers of government. We get that in Isaiah, the three divisions of power. The Lord is our judge, the Lord is our lawgiver, the Lord is our king. Well, you have judicial, legislative, and executive. And in America, because white men who believed the Bible knew that man is inherently evil, man is not basically good, man is basically evil. As the sparks flyeth upward, we read in the book of Job concerning man's nature. And so therefore our founding fathers, who were the most learned group of men in world history, many of them Bible believers, like Roger Sherman, John Witherspoon, and others, they said, you know what, we have to implement a republic here that has separation of powers. One group will have legislative power in a Congress. We, the sovereign people, designate our sovereign power to legislate to the Congress. We designate our sovereign power to rule to the executive. And we delegate our sovereign power in judicial matters to the Supreme Court. We got to separate powers. Because men are sinners, and they want to consolidate power into their hands, into a dictator, which is what we're on the verge of getting here. Going to make the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. We're going to tell the people in Greenland, we want to make you part of the United States. I mean, what's going on here? We got a dictator. No matter how many good things Trump does, he's still acting as a dictator. And it might be the last election, just like he said. Come out and vote, because the last time you're going to vote. And during this, you can very well imagine that it's very possible that the roundups will begin and the FEMA death camps will be open and millions of people are going to be taken there. That's where the Jesuits want to go. Absolute power and then eliminate their enemies. Got to get rid of all the Jews. Got to get rid of all the white Protestant and Baptists. Got to get rid of them. And we'll get rid of most of these blacks here. All there are is a bunch of troublemakers and criminals anyway, because the prisons are full of them. Get rid of them. We're going to get rid of the Muslims. We've always wanted to get rid of the Muslims. It was Islam that drove Loyola out of Jerusalem when he went there in the 1500s. So the Jesuits have always wanted to use Islam for their purposes, and when they're done using Sunni Islam, they'll destroy it through probably a great European war, with America leading the way and Britain leading the way for the destruction of millions of Muslims that have been duped into hating God, hating the Bible, hating Jesus Christ, and hating the beloved Hebrew, Jewish, Israelite people. You're going to reap what they've sown. And the Jesuits, because in fact they are Satan's rulers over his evil system, his evil world system, he will use them to that end. That is, if white Bible-believing men of God do not stand up and start telling the truth and confronting them, meeting the enemies in the gate. And so, we had the greatest nation in world history during the 1800s. We had such great men like George Washington, Andrew Jackson, all white men. And by the way, George Washington had his house servant that was a Bible-believing Christian man whose name was Billy Lee, and George Washington loved him as his own son, and when he died, he gave Billy Lee a part of his estate. Oh, the racist George Washington was slaves! If he was so hateful to black men, why would he give Billy Lee a part of his estate? You bigot, you racist, you lying communist. Jesuitism is communism. Whenever I say communism, I mean Jesuitism. They're the authors of it. They're the perfectors of it. Read my book, Vatican Assassins. They perfected it in the Paraguayan reductions for 150 years, from 1609 to 1759. Get it. Read it. And so whenever you hear communism, think Jesuitism, because there's always a Jesuit somewhere in communism. I have a book on my shelf. It says Karl Marx on the Jewish question. The Jewish question is not new with Hitler. Marx was doing it 50 years before Hitler did, or so. Calling for their death. Marx, a Jew, calling for the death of the Jews and dealing with the Jewish question. Get the book. Read it. Marx was tutored by a Jesuit in the British Museum, Peter Bex, when he was writing the Communist Manifesto. I'm sure he was tutored when he was writing on the Jewish question, too. So we have all these great men. We have Daniel Webster, Henry Clay, John C. Calhoun, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson was not a believer, but he had respect for the Bible, and he had respect for preachers. He had respect for John Witherspoon, who taught George Mason out of Virginia. Roger Sherman, one of the five authors of the Declaration of Independence, a Bible-believing Protestant Calvinist. Declaration of Independence is no pagan document. Get Chris Pinto's The True Christian History of America, and he'll prove it to you. And while you're at it, get his other great DVD called American Jesuits. When you have those two DVDs, you got about all the information you need. And so, we had great judges. We had great judges like Joseph Story. You get his two-volume set, Commentaries on the Constitution. He was a savant. He was brilliant. Probably the second greatest Supreme Court justice we had, second to John Marshall. And his decisions like Marbury versus Madison and others. Then we had Judge Learned Hand. Ever heard of him, Judge Hand? He was known as Judge Learned Hand. And we have the great Judge Stephen Field, who stood against the radical red Republicans on the Supreme Court when they said the privileges and immunities of the 14th Amendment citizenship did not include fundamental rights, common rights. Stephen Field stood up and dissented vehemently. Stephen Field, a great Supreme Court justice. Stephen Field will deliver the Pollock decision in 1895, a great decision. And you have Judge John Marshall Harlan, another great judge. He was contemporary with Stephen Field. And Marshall Harlan went against the holding of the court, saying that the privileges and immunities of 14th Amendment citizenship did not include the Bill of Rights. So these men were Bible-respecting or Bible-believing men that made America great. So what we have to do, if we're Jesuits, we have to overthrow their Bible that they're reading. We have to implement doctrines of non-resistance, like Arminianism, like Arminian Jesuitical dispensationalism. There's biblical Calvinistic dispensationalism, and then there's Jesuitical Arminian dispensationalism, of which all the Bible colleges teach. Dr. Peter Ruckman taught Arminian dispensationalism. He wrote the greatest book on the history of the New Testament church that I've ever read. Two volumes set, excellent. But he hated Calvin. Without Calvin, there's no Protestant Baptist South, Pete. And so, we have the Baptists and Protestants that went to evangelize the American Indians. That's why we see the salvation of Geronimo, the chief of the Apache. He heard the gospel. He was saved by the grace of God. I mean, all these wonderful things were happening. The Jesuits were saying, we got to make these Indians radical. We can't get them to hear the gospel. We got to teach them all the white men ever did was hate them and can rape their women and kill them. We got to teach them that stuff. And so, about this time, in the 1800s, you have great evangelists. You have men like Hudson Taylor, C.T. Studd, Dwight L. Moody, and others. Going to take the gospel to the ends of the earth with modern missions, with modern getting the AV 1611 Bible to the ends of the earth. There's been somewhat 60 or 70 translations from the AV 1611 Bible into other languages. And those other language Bibles are just as much the Word of God as the AV 1611, indirectly inspired by the Spirit of God, moving honest men to do the translating work of the directly inspired Greek text and Hebrew text has been preserved for us, word for word, tittle for tittle, of today. So the Jesuits got to do away with modern missions. And by the way, there was proof that the earth was at rest. You have the Michelson and Morley experiment. As a result of freedom of conscience, as a result of Martin Luther and the Reformation, and lo and behold, Galileo's a liar. You got to ask yourself why the Jesuits who ran the Inquisition didn't put him to death. Because in teaching that the earth was a globe, facilitated the deception to be put on the white nation because physics doesn't sustain the fact that the earth is a globe. It's a plane. You get the word. You get the great work Terra Firma by David Wardlow Scott. He shows you, biblically and scientifically, the Earth is a plane with its mountains and valleys, but it's a plane. It's not a globe spinning around its axis at 1,000 miles an hour and traveling around the sun at 63,000 miles an hour. That's all religion, man. That is not science. That's trash. And I don't care what that mulatto DeGrasse Tyson tells you, working for the white power structure. The Earth is a pear, and it spins the wobbles like a pear. What a liar! What a shame to black men! So what we have here is science blossoming. You have Gleason's work of his flat Earth map. It was going to be put in every school. That was American man, Mr. Gleason, American scientist. He wanted the flat Earth map to be put in every common school in this country. And that was about the turn of the century, going into the 1900s, turn of the 18th century, going into the 1900s. So we can't have the people finding out that the Earth is a plane. We can't have people finding out that the sun is only what is it? What is I forget what Terra Firma says. I think that Robotham says the sun is about what 700 miles away, something like that. We can't have people believing that stuff. Why, then the Earth is the center stage of everything, just as God intended, just as God would intend to send his beloved Son here on this stage of the Earth to die for the sins of the world and especially for his elect, working salvation to will and to do of his good pleasure, and that the great theme of redemption would take place on this plane right here. There's not a bunch of universes. There's not a bunch of other planets in the universes. Predator's a bunch of lies. Science fiction is just that, fiction, all lies. You're not going to any places. We're not going to put a man on Mars. Mars is a star, or a star with the sun, moon, and stars. You can't plan on it. The moon is a disk. It emits light. The moon emits light. I mean, when you start to realize everything we've ever been taught is a lie, and it comes from the Jesuit order in their schools of higher learning, of higher brainwashing, it ought to incite in you a rage to resist it, to spend your money and your time and your effort to resist it, rather than going to the horse races. Or having world golf, all those preoccupations, good for nothing, while your country's being destroyed. So, the Jesuits implement World War I. After they killed several hundred thousand beautiful white Protestant Englishmen and Scotchmen, and those beautiful white Protestant South African Boers in the Boer War, why, we're just going to keep it up. And we will incite World War I in 1914. The classic book on this is The Guns of August, but you get it. The shooting of the Archduke there in Sarajevo wasn't done by Prinkip. It was done by Potiorek, who shot the Archduke in the growing in the coach. I cover all this in my book. So the Jesuits start World War I, and guess who has the gun that shot the Archduke? Why, the Jesuits do. I have a picture of a Jesuit holding it. They're so proud of it when they started World War I, so you would have the mutual annihilation of white English and American Protestants and Baptists and white German Protestant Lutherans of Prussia. We're going to destroy the Protestantism of Prussia. We're going to destroy Protestantism in England and America because we have to get these white Protestant nations to go to war with each other. There's a book called Rome and the War written by a watchman. The guy refused to put his name on the book, but you get the book, Rome and the War by Watchman. And he tells you that it was a mutual annihilation of white Protestants in Germany and England. Disgrace. Where were the statesmen that saying, wait a second, Rome is behind this, and they want to get us white Protestants to kill each other? Where are they? Where are those people? Like preachers today, what's going on here? They want to get the white Russian Slavs and the white Ukrainian Slavs to kill each other in Ukraine so the Jesuits can come in and mop up the rest and now totally control the country when that massive bloodletting is done. America ought to stay out of it completely. But tell the truth, listen, Rome has incited this war in Ukraine because it controls Zelensky and it controls Putin. And we're going to stay out of this. And we're not giving any weapons to anybody. In fact, we should have no foreign aid going to any country in the world, including Israel. No foreign aid. It's all sin. Think you're working to pay taxes for foreign aid to give to some other country that... What do they do for you? Huh? Israel doesn't need foreign aid. They have an economy. They just got to get rid of their Masonic Jewish labor Zionist government working for the Pope so they can really begin to prosper and really get the metals out of the Dead Sea and really continue with their great intellectual prowess in whatever they do in business and in science, and they'll be just fine. So, we got World War One. World War One is going to result in the terrible weakening of Germany and England. And that's when the race mixing is going to start. That's when they're going to send their black English soldiers to start fornicating and raping the German white women. That's what the French are going to do. The black French soldiers are going to be fornicating and raping the white German women. So that the offspring would be mulattoes and mulattas, and they were known as the Rhineland Bastards. The Rhineland Bastards was a result of these black troops, and American black troops too, American, French, and English black troops, taking their turns raping the white German women because we got to bastardize the German race and make it never ever what it was to resist the temporal power of the Pope by establishing a nation like Prussia. Never. That's what they're doing here. That's what they're doing in America, bastardizing the white people in America with forced miscegenation and race mixing. And anybody who doesn't want to do it, why, you're a racist and a bigot. No, I just want to preserve my race, language, and culture, thank you. And you should too, black man. But oh no, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age is race mixing, miscegenation, universal fornication, interracial marriage for the destruction of the white peoples of North America and Canada and England and the Netherlands. And any place else where forced race mixing and miscegenation shoved down our throats by a government that hates us. By a government that's working for the Pope. And especially this military government established on March 9th, 1933. So what we have here is we have, after World War One, we have the Pope's Federal Reserve interjecting all sorts of credit in the economy. And it's going to be the roaring 20s. And we're going to have prohibition. The Bible doesn't prohibit the drinking of wine and strong drink. But we're going to have prohibition here now because that's when John J. Raskob and these other sinners are going to make a fortune out of prohibition because they're going to be the real makers of all the booze. Joe Kennedy. So all these Roman Catholics will make a fortune during prohibition. Then when FDR does away with the 20th Amendment, was the 19th Amendment, then why, look who has all the money and the whole setup to make all this booze. The Mafia. The Roman Catholics. All work for their benefit. So in 1929, with the Roaring Twenties, you have the stock market crash. You want to remember this. The stock market crash was facilitated by three Irish Catholics short-selling the stock. And by the Federal Reserve withdrawing 40% of the credit in circulation. The chief Irish Catholic who sold stock, sold it short, was Joe Kennedy, who would be a Knight of Malta, ambassador to St. James Place in England during FDR's administration, because FDR, the Freemasons, working with Joe Kennedy, the Knight of Malta. Both of them subject to the Jesuit of Georgetown University, Edmund A. Walsh. That's right. And so, FDR is put in office. And he tells the people on Monday, which is March 4th, it's the last time any American president will be inaugurated on March 4th, he tells them about substituting another government here during this time of national emergency and state of war. And so he tells you, if I'm it's necessary, I'm going to assume war powers to deal with the crisis as though we are invaded by a foreign foe. That's part of his inaugural address. He's going to implement war powers. It's Saturday, the 4th, and on the 6th, on Monday, he's going to do it, and he's going to put forth Proclamation 2039 that the Jesuits prepared for him in Georgetown. And that Proclamation 2039 is based on the Trading with the Enemy Act, Section 5B of the Act of October 6, 1917. Trading with the Enemy Act. Section 5B has been amended to include the word hoarding, and they're going to make all the American people hoarders of gold because they have their own gold, and they're going to tell them, you better turn in this gold, boy, by May, communist, socialist, fascist, communist May 1st day, or if you don't, you're going to go to jail for 10 years, you're going to get fined, what, $10,000 or $100,000. It's right in the proclamation. But it's not the law yet because it hadn't been approved by Congress. So we have a four-day banking holiday. FDR puts forth his Proclamation 2039 on March 6, 1933. You got a 4 days where the banks aren't open. Nobody can get their money. People are getting desperate. And so it comes to Thursday, and Congress has an emergency session that's meeting there in Washington, District of Catholics, and the District of Catholics, District of Communists. And they're going to meet there with an emergency session there in Congress to pass the Emergency Banking Relief Act, promoted by that congressman, that alter ego of FDR, Jimmy Burns, that wicked sinner, another Roman Catholic out of South Carolina. And so the Congress doesn't even have a copy of the Emergency Banking Relief Act to read. And so it's read to them from the chair, from Speaker Rainey, and he's going to read it to the children three times. Okay, children, time to read the act, children. You don't have one to follow along in, but I'll read it to you, children. Nobody knows who wrote it. I prove who wrote it in my tax class to geeks. But nobody knew who wrote it. And so then the speaker says, well, we're going to have a vote. Ayes and nays. Ah, the ayes have it passed. There wasn't even a roll call for the passing Emergency Banking Relief Act. Not a roll call. Nobody had a copy of the act. Nobody knew who read it. And Congressman Lundeen spoke up. He was a Methodist out of Minnesota. And he speaks up and he says, we shouldn't be passing this, franticating the Congress, putting them on all this stress. We look forward to the day when you can give us this bill, we can read it and have serious discussion. He said, I'm not voting for it, just like I didn't vote to go into World War I. So Congressman Lundeen out of Minnesota, I believe. A few years later, it gets on an airplane. And it crashes, and that's the end of Lundeen. See, that's how the Jesuit communist fascists work against their enemies. If we can't overcome them by our arguments or by intimidation, we'll just kill them. Mm-hmm. That's what they have to do to obstinate Protestants and Baptists like myself. We're obstinate heretics. We're not just heretics. We're obstinate. That means we're not changing. As the Bible says, be strong, quit you like men, have a manly demeanor about yourself, and resist evil, especially when it's being shoved down your throats by those cowards sitting in the House of Representatives. So, they declare the Emergency Banking Relief Act to be passed, approved and confirmed. Approved and confirmed all the proclamations of the President and Secretary of Treasury for March 4th, heretofore, and hereafter. Every last proclamation of the President and Secretary of Treasury is now approved and confirmed by the Emergency Banking Relief Act. That can be found at 12 U.S.C. 95A-B, which has been moved to a footnote of Trading with the Enemy Act, which is 50 U.S.C. 4305-B. Like that? Like they took that statute, the key statute to the establishment of this military government, they took it out of Title 12 and hid it in a footnote, and they did it in 2015. And so, after the Emergency Banking Relief Act is declared to be passed, and they amended Trading with the Enemy Act to be brought inside the United States now, when they eliminated a little phrase there, Then later on that night, FDR proclaims his Proclamation 2040 of March 9th, 1933, which has been approved by the Emergency Banking Relief Act. And he continues Proclamation 2039 until some president, some real president, as JFK was going to do, the real president's going to come along and issue a termination proclamation and end this state of war national banking emergency with these proclamations. That's one of the reasons why they killed Kennedy. We're not to put a Pax Americana on the world through our weapons of war. What he did when he said that at Columbia University, he was denouncing the emergency war powers military government established by the Jesuits in District of Columbia. So you got to go, Jack. Furthermore, he's going to do away with Spelly's Vietnam War. And furthermore, he printed, some like $5 billion worth of silver certificates where the Federal Reserve can't collect interest on that. You got to go, Jack. And then after we kill you in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, nobody's going to get prosecuted except Clay Shaw by the honest Jim Garrison, of which evidence will be hidden from the jury. Like the name of Clay Shaw was known as Clay Bertrand. His alias was Clay Bertrand. We're not going to put that in evidence because that would prove he was the CIA. And we can't have the CIA being involved in the Kennedy assassination, even though Robert Kennedy Jr. has publicly come out and said that CIA was involved in his uncle's murder. But nothing's going to happen. Nothing. Because you have a bunch of wimps in Washington and they have a bunch of wimpy preachers that would never inspire them to do anything great like kick the Jesuits out, do away with the Emergency Banking Relief Act. We're not going to be under military government anymore and we're going to get back to civilian government where we can be self-governing and we're going to expel all the aliens here illegally and we're going to publicly hang every traitor in government that's done a treasonous act. Shooting's too good. Shooting is an honorable death. Hang them. That's what needs to be done for traitors. Hung in any country. God's order is that for nations, people, language, cultures with borders. That's his order of Genesis 10. We're not to be some sort of international pagan mankind with no borders and no distinctions of nations. That's only shoved on white Protestant nations. So that's what they did. So on March 9th, 1933, the final straw was put in. March 9th, March 6th was the Proclamation 2039. March 9th, Congress passed the Emergency Banking Relief Act. And later on March 9th, FDR puts forth his Proclamation 2040. That sealed the deal. And when that happened, emergency war powers military government was imposed and ousted civilian government. Temporarily. But they don't ever intend to go back. Let's read a little bit from FDR's book that was ghostwritten for him, On Our Way. Let's see what he has to say about going back to civilian government. We read on page 35 and page 36. This is supposedly FDR talking. Strictly speaking, the banking crisis lasted only 1 week. Well, as I covered from March 6th to March 9th. Monday to Thursday. During the second week, from the moment that the banks day by day reopened their doors and long lines of depositors placed their money back on deposit, the most critical part of the banking emergency was over. We're still in that emergency, by the way. But the full meaning of that word emergency, quote unquote, related to far more than banks. It covered the whole economic and therefore the whole social structure of the country. It was an emergency that went to the roots of our agriculture, our commerce, and our industry. That means we've got to regulate them to death and centralize power there with them. Trading with the Enemy Act regulates that. Agriculture and commerce and industry. It was an emergency that had existed for a whole generation in its underlying causes and for 3.5 years, that's from 1929 to 1933, in its visible effects. And its visible effects. It could be cured only by a complete reorganization and a measured control of the economic structure. Sounds like Reconstruction to me. Sounds like what they put the South under for 12 years. Now we got a nationwide Reconstruction. It could not be cured in a week, in a month, or a year. It called for a long series of new laws, new administrative agencies. It required separate measures affecting different subjects, but all of them component parts of a fairly definite broad plan. That's right, a broad plan put together by the Jesuits at Georgetown and Catholic University of America and those other military fortresses. Of a definite broad plan. It sounds like conspiracy. It sounds like FDR believed in conspiracy. Most of all, it called for readiness and understanding on the part of the people. And then here is the slam dunk. Page 36. We could never go back to the old order. Yeah, civilian government. We now have military government. As of this day, Sunday, March 9th, 1933, we have been under emergency war powers military government for 92 years. And we've been under emergency war powers military jurisdiction in all the state and federal courts since 1938. You like that? You like going into court and the public school or the hotel or wherever, and you see the American flag and the state flag trimmed in gold fringe with gold cord and tassels? You like that? Is that just pretty to you, or do you realize that those are military flags? And I want to know, Judge, why you're flying a military flag in this civilian court, in this beautiful court of Lebanon County or Berks County or whatever it is. Why are you flying military colors here, Judge? You know that's a military flag, federal and state. What, is this a military jurisdiction here? They won't answer that. There is not a judge that will ever tell you the truth and answer that question. Because they know, if they do, their lives are probably over. The Bar Association at the top are the communists. They've said they're communists. And they're and under any kind of communist government, it's always a military government. Communist government's always a military government. And they always have concentration camps like Russia, like Germany, and other places. And so, in conclusion, March 9th, 1933 ought to be a day of fasting for us and mourning, seeking the Lord's face, that he would turn this horrible judgment away from us, that we would have a true repentance and turning to God the Father, repentance towards God and faith towards Christ, that we would confess our apathy and our carelessness and our love for pleasure and sports and whatever else in lieu of doing our duty as responsible citizens to keep the government in order when the Jesuits have altered it to oppress us and persecute us and kill us and foment race wars and give us all this corrupted food. And I mean, it's one thing after another. It's when the people are as the enemy. And the people here now are enemy belligerents under living in occupied territories, which the states are now occupied territories. And it's going to continue until somebody comes along and issues a proclamation termination, a termination proclamation that says we're ending the proclamations of March 6th and March 9th. Because those men and women in Congress will never have the courage to put forth a calling for the repealing of the Emergency Banking Relief Act. I think that'd be fun. It would be really fun to call for that and see how many of them would go along with it. How many Democrats would go along with it? How many Republicans? That would be a real acid test to see who's really patriotic in the Congress or not. In conclusion, let us never forget March 9th, 1933. Let us never forget we've been at nothing but war. All and this huge military industrial complex is for war, for the Pope and his military government to wage war around the world to reduce all nations to the temporal political power of the Pope. That's the only purpose of the American military. Navy SEALs, Delta Force, that's what you're used for. Either that is going to be repealed, or we have to call for a Declaration of Independence in our state, and if the state won't do it, then we have to do it on a county level. That's what you do. You can't clean up the Jesuit swamp in their District of Columbia. You got to get away from it. You got to separate from it. Come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. There's not quite anything as unclean as the Pope's District of Columbia with all the papal idols in that city. May we repent. May we seek the Lord. And may we do that which is right before him. And let the Lord do what seemeth good to him. Brother Eric John Phelps, Sunday sermon, March 9th, 1933, this March 9th, 2025. Send your gifts, donations to RBT, P.O. Box 306, Newmanstown, Pennsylvania, 17073. Or you can send me a gift to Cash App. And by the way, thank you, Sister Angie, for your last gift. You can send a gift to Cash App. That's Eric, E-R-I-C-J-O-N-P-H-E-L-P-S. That's the cash tag. You can send it there. Or you can use PayPal. And that is rbpbdonate@comcast.net. RBPB, Reformation Bible Puritan Baptist Church. rbpbdonate, I should say, @comcast.net. We need your prayers. 2 minutes a day, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting, praying for me that the Lord would use me for his purposes. Well, I'm 71, and who knows how much longer I'll be on the plane of the Lord's flat earth. So until we meet again, may the Lord bless you as you do his will according to his word. The AV 1611 Reformation English Bible. Maranatha.